I want to tell you a story about two friends. They meet as young girls, and they don't come from the same world. One is different in ways that she can't hide. The other knows precisely how to fit in, and more importantly, how to be liked. Although they don't particularly like each other, they start out on equal footing, both hopeful and idealistic, and then they run headfirst into a complex power structure. They both see that something is deeply flawed with the system they've entered. They both recognize the same injustice, but they respond to it very differently. And yet somehow, through all of that, they become friends. One refuses to compromise. She tells the truth plainly, even when it costs her everything. The other learns how the system works, how influence flows, how language lands, and how to move within power rather than against it. And thus their paths diverge. If you're thinking this sounds familiar, you are right. I'm talking about the recent Pink and Green wave, the story of Wicked. At its core, Wicked isn't just a retelling of The Wizard of Oz. It's also a story about power, narrative, and dissent. It asks what happens when someone challenges the official narrative and what happens to the people who learn how to survive inside the power structure. Elphaba is green, yes, but she is also principled, outspoken, and unwilling to soften what she believes, even when it isolates her, even when it makes her dangerous. She refuses to accommodate a system that she sees as fundamentally broken. Glinda, on the other hand, understands how the system operates. She's ambitious. She knows how proximity to power matters. She learns how to stay in the room. She's softer. She's pink. To some, Glinda looks like a sellout. Her willingness to work inside the system can feel like a compromise. But by maintaining her position and her voice, she also maintains the ability to shape outcomes from within. Elphaba's ethics are much clearer, but her refusal to bend pushes her further and further outside the circle of influence. She becomes a moral leader, visible, powerful, and principled, just not inside the room where the decisions are being made. One shapes decisions from within the room. The other defines the moral boundary of the room itself. And that tension shows up everywhere for us, not just in intelligence work, but in leadership more broadly. These aren't heroes and villains. They're strategies for navigating systems of power. Welcome to The Unknown Knowns, where intuition meets tradecraft. I'm Dr. Angela Lewis, and this is a space for people who think for a living. Intelligence professionals, leaders, and decision makers navigating complexity, uncertainty, and imperfect information in a fast-paced world. Each week, we explore how intuition, bias, and judgment shape the way we make sense of complexity and how to get better at it. Today's episode is about dissent and why good intentions aren't always enough. Let's return to our story, starting with Elphaba. This is the professional who, at any level, raises uncomfortable truths early, challenges consensus directly, refuses to soften conclusions for political comfort. They're often right, but they're also often isolated. Because systems don't just evaluate accuracy, they shun disruption. Elphabas threaten coherence. They introduce friction where the system wants alignment. They make people, especially those in authority, uncomfortable. And over time, those costs can accumulate. They're left off of email chains, excluded from informal pre-briefs, labeled as difficult rather than essential. Not because they're wrong, but because they don't manage the politics of dissent. Now let's talk about Glinda. This is a professional who understands hierarchy, frames dissent as inquiry rather than accusation, builds coalitions and consensus before challenging conclusions. They know when to speak and when to wait. They know who needs to hear something first. They translate truth into language the system can absorb. And here's the uncomfortable part. They often get more done. Not because they care less about ethics, but because they understand that truth without access doesn't travel. And for leaders already at the table, this tension can feel even sharper. Rocking the boat doesn't just risk your personal influence. It can affect your ability to protect the people below you who are telling the hard truths. Take too soft a stance, and you risk complicity. Take too hard a stance, and you may lose the very position that allows you to shield dissenters, translate their insights, or keep uncomfortable issues alive inside the room. Leadership doesn't eliminate the Elphaba Glinda dilemma. It raises the stakes. Now, here's where most conversations go wrong. We turn this into a moral binary. Alphaba equals brave, ethical, and pure. Glinda equals political, compromised, and calculating. That framing can be dangerous because systems need both. Alphaba's surface reality, Glinda's keep that channel open. Without Alphaba, systems drift into denial. Without Glinda, dissent will burn itself out. The real failure isn't choosing one archetype. It's refusing to recognize what the moment requires. Now let's talk about the hard part. Sometimes the system doesn't want truth. It wants consensus. And that's when professionals feel pressure to choose, speak plainly and risk exile, or stay influential and soften the message. This is where ethics get real, not theoretical. The question isn't, am I telling the truth? It's, am I telling it in a way that can still move the system? Because shouting truth into a void may feel righteous, but it doesn't change outcomes. And this is where our earlier episode about bias comes roaring back in. When we're dealing with broken systems, especially ones that feel unjust, dangerous, or morally compromised, our thinking doesn't get clearer, it gets hotter. Frustration hardens our assumptions, anger narrows our sense of options, and our biases don't just influence our conclusions, they start locking in. At that point, dissent can stop being strategic and start becoming reactive. Not because the concern isn't valid, but because emotion has begun to substitute for judgment. So before deciding how to dissent, there's a more fundamental question to answer. Is this a system that can still be influenced from within? Because not all systems are. Sometimes the system isn't just resistant to truth. Sometimes it's fundamentally broken. There are moments when operating within it no longer mitigates harm. It enables it. When staying quiet, translating carefully, or waiting for the right moment stops being strategic and starts becoming complicity. And in those moments, opting out, walking away, going public, refusing to participate may be the only ethical choice. But that choice comes with its own cost. When everyone principled leaves, there's no one left inside to speak truth at all. There's no clean answer here, only judgment. And judgment requires us to continually reassess not just what we're saying, but whether staying still serves the truth in this system at this moment. But sometimes the real problem isn't how you dissent, it's that the system has stopped wanting dissent at all. And when that happens, it isn't a failure of courage or communication, it's a failure of structure. In these environments, sometimes dissent doesn't just get ignored. It gets managed. Which brings us to another angle to this dilemma that we need to name explicitly. This is what politicization looks like in intelligence. Not necessarily partisanship, but pressure. Pressure to shape analysis to support a preferred outcome. Soften language so it doesn't complicate a decision that's already been made. Emphasize certain data while quietly sidelining other data. Align with leadership intent rather than assess the reality as it is. Politicization doesn't usually arrive in an explicit order to lie. It arrives as guidance, as tone setting, as subtle signals about what will and won't be well received. And that's what makes it so dangerous. Imagine an Intel team tasked with assessing risk around a major strategic initiative. Leadership is enthusiastic. Time, money, and reputation are already invested. The analysis comes back mixed, not catastrophic, but clearly more uncertain and risk-laden than leadership had expected. The response isn't change the conclusion. It's, can we focus more on the upside? Do we really need to lead with the risks? This feels overly cautious. What's the bottom line leadership needs to hear? Nothing here is overtly unethical, but the signal is clear. The analysis is being evaluated not on its accuracy, but on its usefulness to supporting a predetermined direction. That's sliding along the slippery slope of politicization. And once analysts learn that their job is to validate rather than to inform, intelligence stops being intelligence. It becomes justification. Politicization doesn't just distort individual assessments. It can reshape the entire system. Analysts start self-censoring. Uncomfortable insights get delayed, diluted, or buried. Language becomes hedged, not because uncertainty increased, but because safety became the priority. Over time, bad news travels slower. Confidence increases artificially. Leaders lose their early warning system, and decisions are made inside a narrowing bubble of affirmation. This is how organizations walk into preventable failure while believing they were well-informed. And here's the uncomfortable truth. Leaders who politicize intelligence often think they're being pragmatic. They believe they're maintaining momentum, protecting morale, or avoiding unnecessary friction. But what they're actually doing is degrading the one function designed to protect them from blind spots. This is where leadership accountability becomes non-negotiable. If you're a leader who receives intelligence, especially intelligence you don't like, your role is not to manage the conclusion. Your role is to protect analytic independence, reward intellectual honesty, and make it safe to surface inconvenient truths. That does not mean analysts dictate decisions. It means leaders preserve the boundary between analysis and advocacy. And for intelligence leaders specifically, the obligation is even sharper. Your job isn't just to produce insight, it's to shield your people from pressure and to teach them how to push back professionally and effectively when that pressure appears. Not with outrage or martyrdom, but with clarity, with explicit assumptions, documented confidence levels, clear separation between evidence and inference, and calm, disciplined insistence on analytic integrity. Because when analysts are left to absorb politicization alone, they often burn out or bend, and both outcomes can be catastrophic for the system. This is where everything comes back together. Dissent isn't just about speaking up loudly. It's about preserving the conditions under which truth can exist at all. Strategic dissent matters because politicization thrives in silence. Bias thrives in pressure. And systems drift fastest when challenge disappears. Protecting dissent and protecting dissenters isn't optional overhead. It's the cost of doing serious work in complex systems. And leaders who forget that don't just lose credibility, they lose reality. That's why dissent can't just be loud, principled, or well-intentioned. In politicized environments, sometimes truth doesn't fail because it's wrong. It fails because it can't survive the system long enough to matter, which is why strategic dissent isn't optional. It's a skill that determines whether intelligence informs decisions or gets absorbed into the narrative. So here's the pivot. When the system is flawed but not irredeemable, if it's still influenceable, strategic dissent is the skill that matters. Strategic dissent isn't a personality trait, it's a discipline. And this is where intelligence work and leadership can look quite similar. Understanding the system, the audience, and the incentives isn't politics, it's tradecraft. And tradecraft exists precisely to protect truth when systems apply pressure. Politics is using analysis to justify a decision. Tradecraft is using analysis to inform one. For intel professionals and leaders alike, knowing what is truly only half of the job. Knowing how to get that truth heard, absorbed, and acted on is the other half. In this environment, communication isn't an accessory skill for intelligence professionals. It's how analysis becomes influence. So strategic dissent often means choosing your moment, choosing your language, and choosing your allies. And it also means understanding that sometimes dissent isn't a single act, but rather a process. Sometimes you lead with data, sometimes with questions, sometimes with quiet persistence rather than confrontation. And sometimes, yes, scorched earth is a tactic. But it's a narrow one. It's most effective when the system is no longer correctable from within, when moral stakes outweigh the value of continued access, and when you are prepared for the consequences, professionally and personally. What gets people into trouble isn't choosing scorched earth, it's defaulting to it because frustration has overridden discipline. Letting bias, certainty, and moral outrage decide how you communicate instead of treating communication itself as a strategic choice. And yes, sometimes you do need to be alphabet and accept the cost. That should be a deliberate decision, not an emotional one, not a reflex, not a product of unchecked assumptions, and not a default posture. There's one more layer here that matters, and it's often overlooked. Sometimes not everyone on the same side makes the same choice. Sometimes one person opts out, publicly, loudly, and at personal cost, like Alphabet, and someone else leans in, stays inside the system, works the levers, and keeps the channel open, like Glinda. And here's the critical distinction. Ethical exit does not require ethical annihilation. Alphabet doesn't need to blow up Glinda to justify her choices. Her issue is with the wizard, with Madame Morrible, with policies that are harmful to those she loves. Alphabet speaks truth forcefully without branding all those who chose to stay as corrupt, cowardly, or compromised. Integrity isn't proven by burning bridges. It's proven by knowing which ones still matter. And the hard truth is that once dissent turns inward, once we start attacking allies who made different strategic choices, the system doesn't have to silence us. we do the job for it. The most effective movements and the most resilient organizations are often held together by this quiet understanding that people can share values but choose different roles at different moments in the same struggle. One defines the moral boundary, the other keeps pressure inside it, and both require discipline. Now, a note for younger professionals. This matters especially for people earlier in their careers when you're closest to the analysis and perhaps further from the decision. It's easy to assume that restraint equals complicity, that if a leader isn't saying something out loud, they aren't saying it at all. Sometimes that's true. Not all leaders deserve the benefit of the doubt. But sometimes what looks like silence is actually strategy. What looks like delay is timing. What looks like caution is someone trying to keep a door open, not for themselves, but for you. Leadership often involves absorbing risk downward and pressure upward, quietly. And that work is easy to miss if you're only watching for public dissent. Before you assume your superior is your adversary, it's worth asking, what constraints might they be managing that I can't yet see? There's another hard truth that doesn't get said enough. Not all dissent carries the same weight. Sometimes you are the person who should speak plainly in the room. And sometimes you're not there yet. That doesn't mean your insight isn't valid. It means the system doesn't know what to do with your voice just yet. In intelligence work and in leadership, credibility is currency. It's built over time through accuracy, consistency, judgment, and an understanding of how the system actually works. When people trust how you think, they listen when you disagree. And that matters because high-stakes dissent is expensive. You don't want the first time people notice your voice to be the moment you're challenging consensus. For more junior professionals, this is especially important. If you don't yet have that seat, find the ally who does. Someone who understands the politics, has earned the trust, and can carry your insight into the room without it being dismissed or neutralized. That's not weakness, that's tradecraft. Strategic dissent isn't always about speaking louder. Sometimes it's about ensuring the truth survives the journey. Because when the moment does come, when the system really needs to hear something uncomfortable, you want your credibility intact. And if you are the senior leader with the seat at the table, the voice, the access, the accumulated trust, and you're still not speaking up, that deserves its own scrutiny. Ask yourself why. Is the silence genuinely strategic, or is it just safe? Credibility is a form of capital. It's meant to be spent deliberately, wisely, and in service of the truth, not hoarded indefinitely or preserved solely for personal comfort. So here are a few questions that professionals at every level should ask themselves. Is this a moment for truth-telling or truth-building? Am I trying to be heard or trying to be right? Who needs to feel safe for this insight to land? And if I say this way, do I lose future access? And is that a cost that I'm willing to pay right now? These aren't political questions, they're operational ones, and they matter more, not yes, when emotions are running high. So here's the unknown known most professionals carry. If I say this plainly, I might not be invited back. That instinct isn't cowardice, it's pattern recognition. The work is learning when to honor that recognition and when to override it. But here's the critical nuance, and this matters. Strategic dissent is not compliance, it's not giving in, and is absolutely not choosing comfort over truth. The entire point of intelligence and of leadership is ethical judgment. If you're not speaking the truth, you're not doing intelligence, full stop. Strategic dissent isn't about whether you tell the truth. It's about whether you tell it in a way that can survive the system long enough to shape decisions. The trick is learning when to honor that instinct to protect access and when the cost of staying silent outweighs the value of staying inside. And just as importantly, learning when your frustration is sharpening your judgment and when it's quietly hijacking it. Because when bias, certainty, and moral outrage take the wheel, communication stops being strategic, even when the underlying concern is valid. That's not selling out, that's professional judgment. And judgment at its best is what allows truth to travel. So being right is not the same as being effective, or at least not always. And it doesn't always guarantee influence. Dissent is a skill, not a personality trait. Ethics without influence don't scale. Influence without ethics corrodes. Systems need both challengers and translators. The goal is to know which one the moment calls for and why. Thanks for listening to The Unknown Knowns. If this episode made you think or rethink, share it with a colleague or friend who's ready to level up their intelligence tradecraft. Subscribe for more short, sharp conversations about the art and science of professional judgment. Until next time, stay curious, stay grounded, and keep turning intelligence into impact.